Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today's Deep Dive is centered on a really fascinating source document. It's titled Negentropy in Religion. And our mission today is to kind of examine ancient religious texts, but specifically their moral frameworks through this unexpected lens.
Yeah, the lens of thermodynamics, which is, you know, not usually how we talk about this stuff.
No, not at all. We are going to look at these traditions not just as like spiritual poetry or philosophy, but as practical, highly engineered societal algorithms. Algorithms that are designed to fight off the natural human drift toward chaos. And honestly, to get there, we really just need to look at a teenager's bedroom.
Right. It is the perfect, you know, everyday visualization of the core problem here, because you can spend hours organizing a room. You can, you know, fold the clothes, stack the books, clear off the desk entirely.
Yeah.
But if you just close the door and wait, the room will inevitably drift back into an absolute mess.
Just completely on its own.
Exactly. It requires a constant active injection of energy just to maintain that order. And in physics, that inevitable drift toward chaos in any closed system, that is called entropy.
Right. And the source document takes that exact thermodynamic principle and it maps it onto human behavior.
Yeah.
So we're talking about social entropy.
Because human society operates as a highly complex system, right? Left to our own devices without any external input or structured rules, human relationships just naturally generate friction. We drift towards selfishness, tribalism, you know, conflict.
Yeah.
The baseline tendency of humanity, much like the physical universe itself, is this drift toward disorder.
Which forces us to develop a counterforce.
Yeah.
Because if the natural state is chaos, we need negentropy, negative entropy.
Right, exactly.
In physics, that the introduction of energy or structure to create harmony is the active effort of actually folding the shirts, going back to the bedroom analogy.
Yeah, doing the laundry.
Yeah, right. So in a societal context, negentropy is really whatever mechanism we build to foster cooperation instead of conflict, right? To keep the system from just totally breaking down.
And that is the exact framework the document uses to evaluate religious history. It asks us to view these ancient teachings as early, incredibly sophisticated blueprints for lowering human entropy. And it begins by applying this physics lens directly to the teachings of Jesus.
Yeah, specifically the Sermon on the Mount, which is super interesting.
It frames the Sermon on the Mount as this set of radical algorithms meant to disrupt our most destructive social tendencies.
And the concept of, like, disruption is crucial here, especially when we look at how human systems usually collapse. Because the fastest way to tear a society apart is through a positive feedback loop of retaliation. The classic, you know, eye for an eye.
Which is a purely entropic cycle. I mean, if someone wrongs you and your default algorithm is to wrong them back with equal or maybe even greater force, the initial energy of that offense hasn't been resolved at all.
Right. It's just passed on.
Exactly. It's simply been passed along and amplified. Retaliation just breeds more retaliation. The chaos grows exponentially until the social fabric completely unravels.
Yeah, you see it in arguments all the time. But the document contrasts that entropic loop with the Christian command to, you know, turn the other cheek or to forgive unconditionally. And it uses this brilliant phrase to describe the mechanics of that forgiveness. It calls it a social heat sink.
Oh, I love that analogy so much.
It's so good. Anyone who has ever built a high-end computer knows exactly how that works. Like, a powerful processor generates a massive amount of destructive thermal energy.
Yeah, it runs incredibly hot.
Super hot. And if that heat isn't absorbed and dissipated by a physical metal heat sink, the motherboard literally melts down. The whole system fries.
Right. So applying that to social dynamics, an act of violence or, you know, a bitter insult is the processor running dangerously hot. The individual who chooses to turn the other cheek is voluntarily acting as the heat sink for their community.
Right. They absorb the destructive energy of the offense, but they intentionally refuse to pass it on.
Hmm.
They just let it dissipate.
And the efficiency of that mechanism is remarkable when you really look at it. Absorbing that heat is obviously painful for the individual. It demands an immense amount of personal emotional energy.
Oh, sure.
But from the macroscopic perspective of the entire society, it stops a positive feedback loop of violence instantly. It isolates the chaos right there before it can spread.
Yeah. The text doesn't stop at heat dissipation, though, which I found fascinating. It moves into how structural integrity is maintained.
Oh, right. The atomic level analogy.
Yes. Because if you look at atoms, you have protons packed into a nucleus. And because they share a positive charge, their natural physical tendencies to violently repel each other. They want to fly apart.
Right. They need a strong nuclear force, a binding energy to overcome that repulsion and hold the matter together.
Exactly. And the source draws this direct parallel between that physical binding energy and the Christian concept of agape, like selfless, unconditional love.
Because if you think about our natural societal fault lines, right? Tribalism, class divides, ethnic differences, these are the repulsive forces. They're the social protons constantly trying to push away from one another and fracture the system. So when the text commands followers to love your enemies, it's not just offering a moral platitude or being nice. It is introducing a universal binding energy, an algorithm designed to force cohesion across those natural fault lines, to hold disparate groups together who would otherwise, you know, naturally divide.
And we see a very similar thermodynamic approach applied to economics in the text, too.
Oh, yeah, the wealth inequality part.
Yeah. The document points out that extreme wealth inequality functions like a severe thermal imbalance in a closed room. So if all the heat is concentrated in one tiny corner and the rest of the room is freezing, the system is highly unstable.
Right.
That pressure differential creates friction and eventually a chaotic collapse. Which provides an entirely different context for why the Sermon on the Mount consistently advocates for the marginalized and urges the wealthy to give their resources away. It's not just about charity. It's a mechanism for thermodynamic equilibrium.
It acts to move resources or social energy from areas of high concentration to areas of severe scarcity. So by encouraging the voluntary redistribution of wealth, the algorithm lowers the overall pressure of the entire system. It prevents the friction that leads to societal collapse.
And the fact that this redistribution or this forgiveness we talked about is supposed to be voluntary leads to another massive energy-saving measure the text explores. And that's internalizing the law. Because if a society is high entropy, like constantly on the verge of chaos, it requires massive amounts of external energy to stay functional.
Right. We see that in the form of heavy police presences, complex judicial systems, surveillance, rigid state control.
All the bureaucracy.
Exactly. All of that is raw external energy continuously pumped into a society just to keep people from destroying each other.
But the Christian algorithm shifts the focus away from external compliance. It states that harboring internal hatred is morally equivalent to the physical act of murder. And from the system's engineering perspective, installing the law directly into the individual's conscience is brilliant.
It really is.
Because if citizens internally regulate their own friction, the society requires vastly less external force to maintain harmony.
The individuals stop being sources of chaos that require management by the state. They become essentially self-regulating generators of order.
Right. Okay. But I have to pause the physics metaphors for a second here.
Uh-oh.
Because, you know, looking at history, this flawless blueprint didn't exactly produce a flawless world.
Fair point.
If these specific algorithms like agape, heat sinks, internal regulation were designed to create a perfectly ordered society, how did they so often become engines for the exact opposite? I mean, the historical record is full of inquisition, sectarian violence, wars, all justified by these exact texts.
Yeah. And the source document actually anticipates that exact pushback. It issues a very strong warning against attempting to rank religions based on their historical entropic output.
Because that gets messy fast.
Exactly. Identifying any specific tradition as inherently more or less entropic is a highly subjective exercise.
It essentially depends on where you decide to drop your pin on the historical timeline, right?
Exactly. You are constantly dealing with the tension between the pristine algorithms of the texts themselves and the deeply flawed execution of those algorithms by human beings.
Yeah.
The document fully acknowledges this dual nature. Every major world religion has historically functioned as a massive force for negentropy. Yeah. You know, building hospitals, establishing foundational legal codes, creating deep community cohesion.
While simultaneously accelerating entropy by fueling tribal conflicts or justifying societal destruction.
Right. Because human application is always subject to our baseline drift towards selfishness. The tools inevitably get misused. The goal of this analysis isn't to judge centuries of human failure, but rather to look neutrally at the varied structural mechanisms humanity has designed.
Well, let's explore those alternative toolkits then. Because if Christianity's approach to lowering entropy is largely internal and reliant on things like radical forgiveness, the document points out that Judaism tackles the problem from the outside in.
Yes.
It focuses heavily on rigorous structure and restorative action, specifically highlighting halakha and tikkun olam.
Right. So we can understand halakha, or Jewish law, as a highly comprehensive framework for daily life. It doesn't just offer broad moral strokes. It governs the specifics of diet, commerce, community interaction, and, you know, mandatory rest.
Which makes sense, because in systems theory, uncertainty is a primary driver of chaos.
Exactly. When human beings don't know how to interact or what the baseline rules of a transaction are, cognitive load increases and friction occurs.
So halakha removes that uncertainty. By prescribing a structured rhythm to daily behavior, it creates a highly predictable environment.
Right.
You don't have to reinvent the ethical wheel every time you negotiate a contract or resolve a dispute with a neighbor, because the protocol is already established.
It drastically reduces the ambient friction of a community. And then you have Tikkun Olam, which translates to repairing the world.
I've heard that phrase a lot.
Yeah, and this is an explicitly anti-entropic mandate. It operates on the philosophical assumption that the universe is inherently fractured or decaying, and it tasks humanity with the active responsibility of piecing it back together through deliberate acts of justice and charity.
It's a proactive push against the tide, which is cool, but it makes the transition to Buddhism so striking to me. Because Judaism looks at a broken world and says, we need to actively fix the external structures.
Yeah.
But Buddhism, according to the source, looks at the same broken world and treats entropy almost exclusively as a problem of the internal human engine.
That's right. The text focuses on the core concept of dukkha. Now, in English, we typically hear this translated as suffering.
Right.
But mechanically, the document notes it can be understood as friction.
Friction.
Yeah. Imagine a wheel on a cart that is just slightly out of alignment. As it turns, it grinds.
And Buddhism identifies the source of that grinding as human desire and attachment.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when we are constantly grasping for reality to be different than it actually is, we create a delta between what exists and what we want.
Exactly.
And that delta generates heat. It creates chaos.
Therefore, the anti-entropy mechanism here is mindfulness and adherence to the Eightfold Path. Through these disciplines, a practitioner systematically cools down their own internal engine. By detaching from relentless desire, they eliminate the friction they were causing in the world.
Wow.
The algorithm here is deeply individualistic. You lower the entropy of the entire machine by ensuring your specific wheel is perfectly aligned.
That deep internal isolation is a fascinating contrast to Islam. Because when the document analyzes the Islamic toolkit, it shifts back to a macro approach to societal order.
Right. It asks, how do you scale harmony across massive, diverse populations?
Exactly. And the text highlights two specific mechanisms for that, Tawhid and Zakat.
So Tawhid is the absolute oneness and indivisibility of God. And in a thermodynamic framework, it functions as a powerful tool for vector alignment.
Vector alignment, okay.
Yeah. Imagine a massive global community, the Ummah. If everyone is operating with competing ideologies, acting like scattered compass needles, just pointing in random directions, they are going to constantly collide.
And those collisions are the social entropy. So Tawhid introduces a singular, undeniable magnetic north.
It aligns the vectors. Mm-hmm. Suddenly, the friction of competing foundational philosophies is drastically reduced because the entire community is oriented on the exact same axis.
Oh, I see.
It creates profound structural order on a massive scale.
And that philosophical alignment is paired with a very practical mathematical mechanism to maintain it.
Right.
Which is Zakat, mandatory almsgiving.
Right.
Earlier, we talked about wealth inequality acting as a dangerous thermal imbalance. Zakat doesn't just encourage redistribution, it automates it.
It functions as a built-in economic stabilizer. Because it requires a specific percentage of wealth to be continuously redistributed, it dynamically scales with the wealth of the society.
That's brilliant.
It acts as an algorithmic safeguard, mathematically preventing the kind of extreme poverty that always triggers entropic decay and ultimately social collapse.
So we've looked at binding energy, structured protocols, internal realignment, mass vector alignment. The final tradition the source explores tackles universal chaos through a concept that is just breathtakingly vast. Hinduism relies on dharma and karma, which the document describes as a closed loop.
Okay, let's break that down because it's a big concept.
Yeah.
Dharma represents the fundamental cosmic structure of reality. It is the underlying order of nature and human society. So to follow one's dharma, one's specific duty or role is to actively uphold the universe against the forces of dissolution. You are literally maintaining the structural integrity of the cosmos.
And karma is the enforcement mechanism.
Mm.
Because in physics, the law of conservation of energy states that energy cannot be created or destroyed.
Right.
The source argues that karma applies that exact law to moral action. Every action has an equal inevitable reaction. Nothing is random. No moral energy is ever lost.
If you act selfishly, injecting chaos into the social system, that chaotic energy will inevitably route back to you.
Wow.
And this understanding drastically lowers societal entropy because it provides the ultimate incentive for pro-social behavior without requiring an external state to enforce it.
You don't need a massive police force to punish bad actors, and you don't need to retaliate when wronged, because the closed loop of karma guarantees the system will eventually balance its own equation.
Exactly. When we connect all these distinct mechanisms back to the broader picture, it reveals something deeply profound about human nature. We intuitively understand that our baseline default is a drift toward division, chaos, you know, societal clutter.
The messy bedroom.
The messy bedroom. And our greatest philosophical and religious texts are our attempts to hack that default setting. Humanity has spent millennia engineering these brilliant algorithms to help us survive each other.
And I think that's why this framework isn't just an academic exercise in comparative religion or theoretical physics.
Mm-hmm.
It fundamentally changes how we view our daily interaction. Whether you are navigating a tense meeting at work, getting cut off in traffic, or reading an infuriating comment online, you can actually ask yourself, am I acting as a source of friction right now? Am I feeding a positive feedback loop of chaos?
Or am I choosing to be a heatsink?
Right. Am I choosing to be the heatsink? Am I applying binding energy to a situation that desperately wants to fracture? We are operating within this thermodynamic social system every single day.
Which leads to a vital question raised by this entire framework, something for the listeners to deeply consider moving forward.
Lay it on us.
Historically, religion provided these massive, self-regulating, anti-entropy engines for human society, these algorithms for forgiveness, alignment, and wealth distribution. So what happens in a rapidly modernizing, purely secular world?
That is the million-dollar question.
Right. As society distances itself from these internalized ancient frameworks, are we successfully generating new non-religious mechanisms to fight social entropy? Or does a highly secular society inherently require vastly more external energy, more complex laws, more state intervention, more surveillance, simply to maintain the exact same level of baseline order?
Are we finding new ways to internalize the law, or are we just buying bigger locks for the doors? It's definitely something to think about the next time you're standing in a messy room, deciding whether or not you have the energy to start picking up the pieces.